The Torah content from now through Pesach has been sponsored by the Kofsky family in loving memory of Adira, who loved big ideas and asking big questions. Hello, I'm Rabbi Matt Schneeweis, and this is the Stoic Jew podcast, where we explore the relationship between Judaism and Stoicism. Today's reading is from Marcus Aurelius Meditations, Book 9, Chapter 6. And we're going to begin with Ryan Holiday's translation. Well, I don't know if he translated it, but the translation found in the Ryan Holiday book, The Daily Stoic. Aurelius writes, "All you need are these: certainty of judgment in the present moment, action for the common good in the present moment, and an attitude of gratitude in the present moment for anything that comes your way." Now, before we analyze that, I just want to talk about what this episode is going to be about. As you can tell from the title, this is an update on my gratitude journal or a gratitude accountability experiment. I made an episode about this on the day I launched it. On, when was that? July, let me check it out here. July 8th, 2021. I made another episode about this on the 100th day on October 15th, 2021. And I had intended to make an update on the 200th day, but I was on winter vacation and I had decided to not make any content. And even though it was a struggle to not record an episode, even though I would post it later, I decided, nope, I'm not gonna make any content on vacation, and I don't regret that decision. So I figured that since last night I did I did my 225th gratitude journal entry, that seemed like a nice, I don't know if you call it a round number, but a nice number to for another update. Okay, so this is going to be kind of a jumble of thoughts, both about the ideas of gratitude and my own experiences with this experiment. So let's start with the ideas. So when I saw that passage from Marcus Aurelius, I was very excited because I am always on the lookout for passages in the writings of the Stoics that talk about gratitude, and they are very, very few and far between. So when I saw this, I thought to myself, excellent, here's one that I've never seen before, and I'm going to make an episode about it. Only this morning did I realize that this is actually the same excerpt that I started off the gratitude experiment with, and I talked about it then. I don't know what I said about it then. There might be some overlap, but I'm going to share my thoughts about it this morning. So first thing I did this morning was I compared Holiday's translation with a couple other translations. So let me read all three translations I found again, and I just want to point out a few nuances here. So Holiday said, "All you need are these: certainty of judgment in the present moment, action for the common good in the present moment, and an attitude of gratitude in the present moment for anything that comes your way." The public domain translation, or one of them, the Long translation, capital L, has it slightly differently: "Thy present opinion founded on understanding, and thy present conduct directed to social good, and thy present disposition of contentment with everything that which happens, that is enough." Okay, so whereas Holiday said an attitude of gratitude in the present moment for everything, for anything that comes your way, Long says the present disposition of contentment with everything which happens. Okay, and I think maybe I'm nitpicking here, but to me, attitude of gratitude, you know, sounds like something that you kind of summon up, whereas present disposition of contentment to me sounds much more like a character trait of being a grateful person. So I actually like that translation better. And then Farquharson has what I think is the best translation. He says, "Sufficient are the present judgment that grasps its object, the present social act, the present disposition well satisfied with all that comes to pass from a cause outside the self." So that translation, instead of saying anything that comes your way or everything which happens, he says all that comes to pass from a cause outside the self. And then in Farquharson's commentary, he explains that what Marcus means is beyond, is what is beyond one's own control, what he often calls in the language of his school the indifferent, objects such as pleasure and pain, good and ill repute. So I like that translation better because it underscores the foundation of Stoicism of making a distinction between what is within your control and what is outside of your control, and saying that you should have an attitude of what does he call it? Satisfaction or gratitude or contentment with everything outside of your control, which are these indifference. Okay. So when I was reading that, I was thinking to myself, okay, things outside of your control, well, in Judaism, we refer to things outside of our control as coming from Hashem, right? We say how kol bidei shemayim chutz miyira shemayim. Everything is in the hands of heaven except for fear of heaven. And fear of heaven in that context, as the Rambam explains in Shmona Prakim, he says fear of heaven means everything within the realm of your own free will decision making. So everything outside of that is in the hands of heaven, is from God, whether through hashgacha pratis, you know, personal individual providence, or through hashgacha klalis, the laws of nature. For an elaboration on that, you can listen to my the first episode of season 7, where I talked about my Rosh Yeshiva's clarification of that idea. But anyway, we talk in Judaism a lot more about, let me back up again. So I was thinking about this in the context of how difficult it is to find Stoic writings about gratitude. And I've wondered why that's the case. And the Stoics also have an idea of God and of providence, and they do talk about God and providence, but seemingly not in the context of gratitude. So I was thinking about like what accounts for this, and it's hard for me to say definitively because I don't really know Stoic metaphysics, nor am I interested in it. But just from my own exposure, I think one of the things that accounts for this is Judaism's unique stance on how to relate to God. On the one hand, we maintain that that God's essence is completely unknowable. Okay, as we are going to read in this week's Parsha in Kisisa, the Shabbos, where Moshe Rabbeinu asks Hashem, Hara'ini na es kavodecha, show me now your glory, which means I want to have knowledge of your essence. And Hashem responds, lo suchal liros es panai ki lo yirani ha'adam v'chai, that you cannot see my face, meaning you cannot have knowledge of my essence, for no man can see me and live, meaning that as long as a man is a mind operating through a physical body and the senses and the imagination, then our ability to have positive knowledge of God's essence is, we have no ability to do that. It's always going to be distorted. So we can have no grasp of God whatsoever. And in fact, I feel like I've quoted this a lot this week, but let me just read one of my favorite, quotations to this effect here. Give me one second. I should have looked at this ahead of time. Da, 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 da. We say, yeah. Rabbeinu Bachi ibn Pakuda, one of the first Jewish philosophers to write a book on philosophy, says, the ultimate result of your knowledge of God should be the confession and conviction that of his glorious essence, you are completely ignorant. If you form in your mind or imagination a picture or a representation of the Creator, strive to investigate his being, and then you will be convinced of his existence, and all likenesses of him will be rejected by you, so that you will find him through reasoning alone. So in other words, the only way to relate to God is through reasoning, not through through imagination or through any likenesses. And the reason why is because we hold that God is absolutely one, has no parts, is absolutely non-physical, has no physical qualities, no emotions, cannot change. You know, so we're talking about a very, very high order here in terms of a God that is very, very abstract and removed. Okay. On the other hand, the Torah's approach, which is also followed by Chazal, by the sages, is Dibra Torah Kalash Medei Adam, that the Torah speaks in the language of man, which means that we use anthropomorphisms about God and describe him in physical terms and ascribe emotions to him, not because we believe that God has emotions or physical qualities, but because if we didn't do that, then God would just be a pure abstraction and it would be impossible to relate to him. And therefore, we begin on a baseline of a very sensory, imagination-based concept of God that that our emotions can attach to, and we gradually, as Rumi Bakia says, strip that away to the point where we relate to him through reasoning alone. So it's a real tightrope here, you know, walking on this tightrope of acknowledging the reality of God as a being who is completely beyond our understanding and has no qualities, and then speaking of him and relating to him as a being with qualities so that our emotions can relate to him. Now, again, I don't know what stance the Stoics take on this, but here's one thing I was thinking about. You look at that passage in Marcus Aurelius, and whereas he describes things that happen to you as either things which happen or as anything that comes your way, or as all that comes to pass from a cause outside the self, we relate to it as it's coming from Hashem. And we think of Hashem as a being. And again, even relating to God as a being is something that is inaccurate. Like, he is not a being, but we choose the metaphor of being because if you don't personify God, so then what ends up happening is you default into this position where you view yourself and human consciousness as the only being in the universe, and everything else that happens to you is just a blind force. And you end up basically feeling like you are the center of the universe, you are the center of reality, and everything revolves around you, and somehow you are owed this because you are the only being who can, you're the only being in the universe. You know, you and your species are the only being in the universe. So I think it's very important. I guess what I'm trying to say is like this, and this is a theory that I'm developing. I'm not absolutely convinced of this yet, is that maybe the reason why the Stoics don't talk about gratitude and we do is because maybe the feeling of gratitude is really only possible, truly possible, from one being to another. And if we don't relate to God as a being, then we won't feel gratitude. We'll just, you know, we might feel contentment with things that happen to us beyond our control, but to actually feel gratitude, you know, towards benevolent beneficence that graced us with this goodness, that's only possible if we are emotionally relating to God as a being, you know? So that's just a theory. Let me know what you think about the theory. Okay, that was thought number one. Another thought I had, this is already too long of an episode. Let me wrap this up by just talking about my, what has changed or what realizations I've had in my gratitude experiment over the last 125 days since the last update. So first, let me just recap how the experiment works. Oh, it's not an experiment anymore. It's a practice now. How my gratitude journal practice works, which is that every day I write an email to my, my good friend and chavrusa, Levi. And in the email, I write three things that I'm grateful for, that I felt grateful for that day. I write one moment of savoring, a time when I consciously enjoyed or allowed myself to feel or experience something, and one act of chesed or tzedakah, one act of good that I did for someone else or even for myself. And so I write the email every day and send it to him, and then he does the same for me. He lives in Israel. I live in the United States, so I tend to get his email in the morning at some point, and he tends to get mine. I get mine in the middle of the day, sometimes late morning, sometimes early afternoon, and he gets his when he wakes up. And this has been going on for 225 days. So I was thinking back, I think I might have pointed this out in an earlier episode. These roughly correspond to the three things that Marcus Aurelius says, that sufficient are the present judgment that grasps its object. So that has to do with actually, you know, forming, you know, allowing yourself to perceive what is going on at the present moment. That it corresponds to savoring. The present social act, that corresponds to an act of kindness. And then the present disposition of gratitude, which corresponds to the gratitude. So I think that's an interesting thing. So the three changes, I think, or three things I've noticed that have shifted in a positive way over the last 125 days is, number one, I find that a lot of days now when I write about gratitude, I am expressing gratitude about the setbacks or the negative things or the obstacles. For example, just to talk about a recent one, you know, I mentioned 2 days ago or two episodes ago, that I've been struggling with insomnia. And so I have written a lot of entries about my gratitude for getting a bad sleep last night, you know, and I don't just write it to, I don't force it. I don't force the gratitude. I'm genuinely expressing gratitude that, let's say I got a bad sleep, woke up at 4 a.m. and then couldn't fall asleep, and then decided to get out of bed and you know, read or like, you know, or learn or something like that. So I will write about the gratitude that I have for, you know, adding an extra, hour, 2 hours onto my day and, having a productive morning. Or let's say my insomnia makes me really upset, and then that feeling of being upset leads me to write in my journal, and that leads me to an insight that I wouldn't have otherwise gotten. So I'll write gratitude about that. Or I'll write about the fact that I, had insomnia and I thought that this was going to ruin my day. And then I get to the end of the day and find that I had a very, very productive and enjoyable day despite my insomnia. So I found that the gratitude journal has helped me form the disposition of being grateful for even the negative things. And again, this is, you know, easier to do with minor negative things like insomnia than it is with major negative things. But you got to start somewhere, right? So I saw actually a quotation from Jana Levin, who is a professor of cosmology at Barnard. I don't know how much I agree with this overall attitude, but it definitely resonates with me. She says, "I used to resent obstacles along the path, thinking if only that hadn't happened, life would be so good. Then I suddenly realized life is the obstacles. There is no underlying path. Our role here is to get better at navigating those obstacles." So I certainly agree with her that we should have that attitude towards obstacles. I mean, the question though is that going to lead? Is the feeling of is there that there is no path and life is just obstacles? Is that the best mentality to have? That I have to think about a little bit more. But this benefit of viewing the obstacle as the path or the obstacle as the way I've strengthened that muscle with the gratitude journal. A second difference that I've noticed in the past 125 days is with the savoring thing. You know, I used to have to, that used to be the hardest thing to write about. I used to have to like scramble at the end of the day to think back and think, what did I consciously allow myself to enjoy? But lately I've found that I am proceeding through my day looking for opportunities to savor things. And I think because of my recent, or not so recent, but the mindfulness practices that I've cultivated since September and October, and especially now since the beginning of February, have created a lot more space for allowing myself to savor things and to be present with the enjoyments that I have. Also, I think I've expanded the definition of savoring to include other things that are not intrinsically enjoyable. Like earlier this week, then it was extremely cold. I think it was, I think with the wind chill, it was like, I don't know, like 3 degrees outside when I walked to Yeshiva. And so when I walked, it was very, very cold. And I wrote about that experience of savoring of, you know, it did make me feel alive. And I was very conscious of the fact that not everyone is able to, this is, I guess, some gratitude as well. Not everyone is able to walk, period, right? Here I am walking to Yeshiva. Not everyone is able to walk. And the fact that my legs work and that I'm able to move to my destination is something that I'm thankful for. And then the savoring was just allowing myself to feel that experience of the cold and be reminded of that and just, you know, being present with that. So that was a benefit. And then the third benefit, which has been going the entire time, but I was just thinking about this recently, is that this gratitude journal is an opportunity to witness and to be witnessed by a very good friend. And I use that term witness because I don't really think, I can't think of a better term that, like, you know, I think that a lot of life is lived with a certain type of loneliness. Not loneliness like, oh, I'm lonely, but loneliness in the sense of, you know, you have your own experiences and thoughts that are in your own mind and people can't see that, you know? And I think that this is true even with people who have lots and lots of friends or who have a big family, that, like, you know, you can, I don't know, like be married with 10 kids and, like, you know, you still have your own thoughts and your own feelings. And it's very easy to just keep those to yourself. And I think that's why I think that this practice is very good to do with a friend or a chavrusa, because it's a relationship that exists in the realm of helping each other develop as human beings, but not with the complexities of like a marriage or anything like that. You know, like you know, you are friends. You've gone through similar experiences together. You learn together, and this is another component of it. And I find that I've gotten so much closer to Levi, and he's expressed the same thing in terms of me. And I think that like there are certain things that not just certain things, many things on a day-to-day basis that I'm just not going to necessarily, I wouldn't have necessarily shared were it not for the fact that I was writing this gratitude journal, you know, from like, I don't know, from let's say like personal accomplishments that are too minor to actually like, you know, talk about, but I will express gratitude for, or complaints. I mean, you know, complaining is not a good behavior, but if I am trying to see the good in the annoying things that happen to me, and I write about that in the gratitude journal and have someone witness it, it just strengthens that attitude. And again, that's not something that is easy to do in the course of a day-to-day life, of just like expressing those thoughts. And so I think it's been very, very good to be witnessed and to bear witness to the thoughts and feelings of this nature of a very good friend. And that's, again, why I think this is just another perk. In addition to all the other benefits, then this has strengthened my friendship with Levy. So, okay, this has gone on way too long. I'm really bad. Okay, I got to find a way to, you know, to make shorter episodes and to get back to the original length. But for now, that's it. Okay, that's it for today's episode. If you've gained from what you've learned here today, please consider contributing to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/RabbiSchneeweiss. Alternatively, if you would like to make a direct contribution to the Rabbi Schneeweiss Torah Content Fund, my Venmo is at Matt-Schneeweiss, and my Zelle and PayPal are mattschneeweiss@gmail.com. Even a small contribution goes a long way to covering the cost of my podcast and will provide me with the financial freedom to produce even more Torah content for you. If you would like to sponsor a day's or a week's worth of content, or if you are interested in enlisting my services as a teacher or tutor, you can reach me at rabbischneeweiss@gmail.com. Thank you to my listeners for listening, thank you to my readers for reading, and thank you to my supporters for supporting my efforts to make Torah ideas available and accessible to everyone.